Welcome to Reconquest on the Crusade channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie coming to you from St. Benedict Center in Richmond, New Hampshire. Our websites are Catholicism.org and Reconquest.net. My email address is bam@Catholicism.org. That's bam@Catholicism.org. I can be found either on Twitter, @Brother_Andre, and on Facebook. Tonight's show is on distributism, economics as if God and the family matter. My guest is in the second segment will be Mr. John Sharp, the co-founder and managing director of IHS Press, which publishes a lot of titles about this subject and other subjects pertaining to the social teaching of the Catholic Church. Now, you all know that this show's unapologetically, confessionally Catholic. Many of the truths that we discuss on this show are truths of the supernaturally revealed variety, things pertaining to the Trinity or the Incarnation or the saints or things of that nature, Holy Scripture and so forth, as taught and safeguarded by the Magisterium of the Catholic Church. Now, the Church is divinely appointed as the teacher of mankind, and she has a role in safeguarding and handing down not only the divine positive law, which we know is Scripture and tradition, in other words, what's been divinely supernaturally revealed, but also the divine law written on man's heart, which we also call the natural law or the moral law. Because of this, and because the Church has a vested interest in man living his temporal life in a virtuous manner that is conducive to his supernatural end, the Church has a clearly articulated social doctrine that rests firmly on the natural law. And again, when I say the natural law, I don't mean the law of physics or the law of chemistry or the laws of gravity or things like that. I'm talking about the moral law, which is naturally knowable to all. This interest of the Church in temporal things includes man's political and economic life, both of which are to be governed by principles of justice, and both of which ought to help and not to hinder man's eternal salvation. One of the horrible realities of modernity is what the late great Father Dennis Fahey called the inversion of goods, meaning the topsy-turvydom of what we might call values today, putting first things last instead of putting first things first, and putting last things first. We see it in the realm of economics in this way. Money, which is also called coin wealth, exists as a means of exchange for real wealth, that is, the tangible goods that man needs, such as food, shelter, and clothing. And this real wealth exists for the good of man. Now, that's the way that it should be. But that order is inverted in the modern economy. How? Well, because man is reduced to a producer of goods, and the goods are there in order that money may be made. Now, of course, at the top of the food chain, there are other men, a very small amount of them, who make the money. But the point is, the vast majority of men are merely wage slaves working for this system where money's at the top of the food chain, then goods that men need or are told they need, and at the bottom of the food chain is man. So the hierarchy has been inverted, and this food chain, as we say, has been completely reversed. And this is to the detriment of man, and this is to the detriment especially of the family. Just as the purpose for men coming together in society is that they might live virtuously, this was a concept that the Greeks had, not just Catholics, not just Christians, but the pagan Greeks had this, and even the founding fathers of our republic had this, that men come together in a society that they might live virtuously. So too, the purpose of economic activity is to provide for man's temporal needs so that people may save their souls. In other words, in order to live virtuously, we have a certain need of temporal things. The destitute man is probably not going to be living a virtuous life. He's going to be stealing, he's going to be scrapping, doing whatever he can in order to survive. And he certainly won't have the leisure to raise his mind to higher things, not only the higher things of this life, which require an education and so forth, but eternal things. In short, when man is at the bottom of the food chain, he is degraded and his temporal life becomes a hindrance and not a help to his salvation. So the Church obviously has a vested interest in this. This fact was of grave concern to the popes, who articulated the church's social doctrine in the face of modernity's two dominant economic systems, namely monopoly capitalism or industrial capitalism or just capitalism on the one hand, and the collectivist forms of economics on the other, namely socialism and its more particular form of communism on the other. As an alternative to these two systems, which the thinkers we are here promoting would consider to be part of the same evil continuum, a group of English thinkers in the early 20th century, including Gilbert Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc, but by no means limited to these two men, articulated a system called distributism. Its ideals were contrary both to socialism and to capitalism. Against the socialists, they advocated for private ownership, and against the capitalists, they advocated for the most widespread possible ownership of productive property, rather than the concentration of wealth in the hands of the few. Their ideal can be summarized in these few words. They wanted a well-distributed ownership of productive property. You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network. I am your host, Brother Andre Marie, and we're talking about economics as if God and the family matter. So let's get to a little bit of what some distributists have written on the subject. And I don't have time, obviously, to read long excerpts, but in the 1926 tract written for the Distributist League and published in London called What is Distributism? A distributist thinker by the name of K.L. Kenrick distinguished distributism from its two alternatives in these words, quote, "There are three economic theories struggling for supremacy in the modern world. They are capitalism, the doctrine that property is best concentrated in large masses in the hands of a few people; socialism, the doctrine that property is best owned and controlled by the state," and of course socialism includes communism; "and finally, distributism, the doctrine that property is best divided up among the largest possible number of people. Broadly speaking, we may say," continuing with Kendrick's quote, "broadly speaking, we may say that distributism means every man is his own master as far as possible. Socialism means nobody is his own master, but the state is master of all. Capitalism means a select few are their own masters. The rest of us are their servants." Again, that's from a tract written by K.L. Kenrick, published by the Distributist League in London in 1926 and called What is Distributism? It may interest our Catholic listeners to know that Fulton Sheen actually echoed a lot of these ideas. I don't have time for the full quote, but it's in the introduction to a book published by IHS Press, again, headed by our guest this evening, Mr. John Sharp. He quotes this work of Fulton Sheen's, Communism and the Conscience of the West, from 1948. He says this: "If by capitalism is meant not diffused ownership of property, but monopolistic capitalism, in which capital bids for labor on a market and concentrates wealth in the hands of the few, then from an economic point of view alone, the church is just as much opposed to capitalism as it is to communism. Communism emphasizes the social use to the exclusion of personal rights, and capitalism emphasizes personal rights to the exclusion of social use. The church says both are wrong, for though the right to property is personal, the use is social. It therefore refuses to maintain capitalism as an alternative to the economic side of communism," it being the church. "Monopolistic capitalism concentrates wealth in the hands of a few capitalists, and communism in the hands of a few bureaucrats, and both end in the proletarianization of the masses." Wow, that's a hard word. "The true Christian must rid himself of the delusion that in opposing communism, the church thereby puts itself in opposition to all those who would seek to change the present economic system," which of course was capitalist. He's speaking in America in the 1940s. "The Christian concept denies there is an absolutely owned private property exclusive of limits set by the common good of the community and responsibility to the community. The more anonymous and impersonalistic property becomes, the less is the right to it. The church agrees with communism in its protestations against the injustice of the economic order, but it parts with it in the collectivity being made the sole employer. For this reduces the individual to the status of a serf or slave of the state. Concentration of wealth is wrong, whether it is done on the Hudson or on the Volga. End of quote. Now, there's a lot more to the quote, as I said, than that. Very articulate statement. And he didn't identify himself, I don't think, as a distributist, but he is identifying their ideals here. He's articulating their ideals. In perennial philosophy, economics, like politics, is studied as part of the science of ethics. I know that that sounds like a bad joke today, that politics and economics are part of the science of ethics, the philosophy of ethics, but it's true. Therefore, economics are subject to the moral law, and we cannot reasonably argue, as many do, many laissez-faire capitalists, that the blind forces of the market need no outside law since they themselves establish wages and price and so forth. Man is simply too prone to evil for that to work. And mind you, people will say that it works. Yes, but for whom does it work? Does it work for the family? Does it work for man as a whole? No, it works for the few who get rich off of it. Over and above the necessity of economics being subject to the moral law, though, the distributists advocated that ownership of productive property by a family is a moral good that the economic order of society must defend and facilitate, which of course means that the laws are going to protect the family in this regard. My guest tonight would agree, I think. This has been the common opinion of all the sources of Catholic teaching on social questions, as well as the teaching of the popes, who most clearly articulated the social doctrine in the face of an economically perverse modernity. Now, those popes would be principally Popes Leo XIII, Pius XI, and Pius XII. Common Catholic and natural law principles led others in continental Europe and in America to oppose the two dominant economic systems of modernity. Of course, communism or socialism and capitalism we're talking about. The Jesuit Father Heinrich Pesch advocated a system known as solidarism, and the French Catholic layman René de la Tour du Pin worked for a system known as corporatism, which applied these principles of the Catholic Church's social doctrine to industrialism. Again, implied the principles of the widest possible distribution of productive property. He applied it to industrialism. In America, there were the famous Southern agrarians who did cooperate at times directly with the English distributists. Up here in Yankee Land, where I'm from now, where I live now, in New Hampshire, there was also a distributist league of New England. These guys were also in communication with the English distributists. One of the most authentic voices of traditional American conservatism, Richard Weaver, echoed these ideals in his 1948 classic, Ideas Have Consequences. People, by the way, will attack distributism as liberal, as a gateway to socialism, as sort of backdoor socialism, which it's not. All the distributist thinkers were very anti-socialist. But here's one little arrow to have in your quiver if you get into that argument. One of the most authentic voices of American conservatism, if there is an American conservatism, if there is a conservatism in the United States that harkens back to the tradition of Europe, if there is such a thing as an American conservatism, this man articulated it, and this is Richard Weaver. In his book, Ideas Have Consequences, and he wrote an awful lot more than that. But in his 1948 book, Ideas Have Consequences, you do see a lot of these ideas articulated. Again, the idea of the most widely diffused possible ownership of productive property. You see it in Weaver's 1948 book. From the early part of the 20th century through the 1920s and the 30s, these alternative views to capitalism and socialism were seriously challenging the status quo. But this essentially conservative, traditional, and humane vision of life and its accompanying critique of modernity was eclipsed after World War II. Some attribute this to the new synthesis of conservatism that arose in reaction to the Red Menace. Anti-communism formed a new political right, which, in John Sharp's words, joined a certain social conservatism with an apologia for corporate capitalism and an interventionist foreign policy. End quote. By and large, this new synthesis is what now passes for conservatism, along with the more liberty-loving strain that we call libertarianism. And of course, the libertarians are not going to be friendly to this concept of distributism either, because they're the ones who most vociferously defend laissez-faire capitalism and talk about the market being a self-sustaining thing. It doesn't need any moral checks on it. Let me point out that big business capitalist, the big business capitalist is not always opposed to big government when it suits his purpose. In other words, he might talk the talk of freedom from government interference when it comes especially to his bank account, but he's not adverse to using the big government when it helps him. For all his protestations of freedom and so forth, he's not adverse to a little eminent domain land grab here, a la Donald Trump, or a little protectionism there, as in the case of the pharmaceutical industry's very unhealthy alliance with the AMA and the FDA. Oh, yes, and unhealthy was a joke, just in case you missed that. Okay, we're talking about health, right? For the purposes of profit. So these guys are profiteering. The pharmaceutical industry, Big Pharma, as it's sometimes called, makes obscene profits, and the FDA rubber stamps a lot of their products, which of course are poisoning much of the American populace. And they have this sort of monopoly on healthcare, and you can't be taken seriously, doctors who prescribe alternative things like herbs, because an herb that helps somebody cannot be trademarked. It doesn't have a formula that can be trademarked. It's not good for these big businesses. So all of the alternative stuff you're going to find that actually works will have a label on it saying that this hasn't been tested by the FDA. All these claims that this is not intended to treat, diagnose any disease. So things that actually help people and don't make them sicker, which a lot of these pharmaceutical products do, aren't taken seriously by the FDA. So you have big government in league with big business, and they're making big profit, and it's harming people. I think the distributists of the 20s and 30s would be ranting against this stuff way more than I am right now. Let's not forget also the obscene amounts of money made by the military-industrial complex with all the unjust wars that it prosecutes for the purposes of freedom? No, for the purposes of profit. For the purposes of profit, lots of people that make obscene, disgusting amounts of money off of the blood of American serving men in the military who go abroad to fight these unjust wars, many of them well-intentioned, of course, but they're getting killed for no good reason. This is crony capitalism at its worst and almost at its most murderous. Of course, the dubious distinction of the most murderous crony capitalism probably belongs to that other unnatural marriage between big government and that private federation of companies known as Planned Parenthood. Where the capitalism begins and the socialism ends here escapes me, because there are private stakeholders that stand to profit a lot and do profit a lot from this union of the government with a baby-killing industry. To me, anyway, all of this confirms the truth of Belloc's assertion that capitalism and communism are, quote, hellish twins, end quote. You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network. I am Brother Andre Marie. When we come back after the break, we will be joined by my guest, Mr. John Sharp. Please keep listening.
You're listening to Reconquest with Brother Andre Marie, seeking that which was lost and fighting for it. Exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.